morning. May it please the court. I'm Suzanne Lee Elliott. I'm here on behalf of Mr. Carlos Brown in this appeal of his conviction for possession of methamphetamine. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay.
So in this case, Mr. Brown, the personnel at Bartels called the police because they believed Mr. Brown was shoplifting in their store, and that call to 911 included information that perhaps Mr. Brown had a weapon. The police arrived and waited until Mr. Brown had exited the store. At that point, they asked him to stop and asked him if he had been shoplifting. He denied it. They asked to see in his bag. He opened a plastic bag he had. No stolen goods were found. And at that point, one of the two deputies present decided that if they were going to have this conversation, it was important to pat Mr. Brown down for weapons in a Terry stop. In doing so, he felt an object in Mr. Brown's pocket, which he said was immediately recognizable to him as a methamphetamine pipe. He immediately arrested Mr. Brown for possession of drug paraphernalia. And after that, in the search incident to that arrest, the small amount of methamphetamine was found on Mr. Brown's person. In this case, the defense counsel moved to suppress the finding of the meth pipe, which led to the probable cause for the full custodial arrest, because mere possession of drug paraphernalia is not a crime. The judge denied that motion, stating, for purposes of arrest with probable cause for paraphernalia, you don't have to have proof beyond a reasonable doubt at that point in time that there's remnants of smoking meth in the pipe or that Mr. Brown intends in the future of using it to smoke meth. That is error as a matter of law. In Washington, now it's not entirely clear whether...
Are you addressing the error that was made in denying the motion to suppress, or the error that was made in convicting the person?
In denying the motion to suppress, because, of course, if the arrest for mere possession was unconstitutional and the full custodial arrest and the finding of the meth was improper.
Okay.
So it was an error as a matter of law.
I guess what I'm trying to be sure I keep straight in my mind is that your argument in the trial court, your client's argument, was not probable cause or lack thereof, if I'm understanding. Aren't you making a slightly different argument that was made?
No, this was the argument made by counsel, which is there was no probable cause for custodial arrest, so the discovery of the methamphetamine had to be suppressed.
Okay.
Because it was found after this arrest for possession of paraphernalia, which is not a crime. Mere possession is not a crime. The trial judge erred as a matter of law because he found that mere possession of paraphernalia was a crime, and that was sufficient for the full custodial arrest, so the later discovery of the small amount of methamphetamine was constitutional and legal and could provide the basis for the contraband that was the evidence at the stipulated trial. So it was not clear from the trial court proceedings whether the court was proceeding under 6950, which is the state statute regarding paraphernalia, or the slightly different and a little bit looser criminal code for Snohomish County.
In fact, the Snohomish County code was not mentioned in the trial court.
No. It was, however, mentioned on appeal, and but under either of these statutory provisions, there was no crime. So under state law, you have to actually use the paraphernalia. Use of paraphernalia is the crime. There was no evidence that the police observed or anyone observed Mr. Brown using this pipe to ingest contraband. The Snohomish County Code is possession with the intent to use. Again, there was, because the custodial arrest happened immediately upon this feeling of the pipe, there was no indicia of intent to use. In fact, there's really no indicia even after the arrest. There's no the methamphetamine that Mr. Brown was convicted of was not in the pipe. There was no indication that he was in a area where drug use was high. He was at the Bartels. It wasn't a drug house.
Well, let me ask you this. You that one of the oddities in the findings is that in the CR6 findings, there's a finding about that there was residue. But nobody mentions that in the appeals. I take it that that's because there wasn't.
There was no evidence. Stipulated trial. So
no, I'm talking about the 3-6 hearing. That's where that finding is, I think.
And I would have to go back and check, Your Honor. I have been wrong in the past, but in my brief, I assert there was no finding about residue and no evidence or testimony about residue in the pipe.
Right.
So if it is in the CR6 findings, that would be my error, but it wouldn't be supported.
Detective Koster testified at the 3-6 hearing. Was his incident report admitted, and if so, was it admitted for substantive purposes, or was the evidence that came from Detective Koster only his testimony at that hearing?
I don't recall if they attached the police report at the stipulated trial or whether the judge...
I'm asking about the stipulated trial. I'm asking about the suppression hearing.
At the suppression hearing, it was just the court relied on his testimony. And to the extent his testimony conflicted with some police report, I would rely on his testimony under oath. Obviously, the police report wouldn't have been such.
Well, the issue has been raised whether there's a finding in the 3-6 hearing that wasn't grounded in the evidence at the 3-6 hearing. So I'm not inclined to weigh the evidence. I'm just wondering, was there evidence?
No, there was no evidence, as I recall, from the 3.5, 3.6 hearing that residue was found. It simply was the conclusion that the officers, in his experience and training, that this was a meth pipe. So I'd ask the court to reverse. The arrest here was for mere possession of paraphernalia, which under... neither of the two statutory provisions cited by the state is it a crime. I'll leave the issue of whether or not plain feel, plain touch, whatever you want to call it, is a permissible theory under the Washington State Constitution. Our state Supreme Court has yet to weigh in on that. And this court, of course, could reverse on the first basis and avoid the constitutional problem here. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Janice Albert. I'm a deputy prosecutor for Snohomish County here representing the state of Washington. I'd like to address first the issue of whether there was residue in this pipe. At the suppression hearing, that issue was never raised by either side. There was no questioning about it, and there was no testimony about it. The police report was not attached to any document submitted that I found at the hearing. It was not relied on by any party. It was not part of the judge's oral ruling. It simply appeared on his written findings, and I don't know where it came from.
So we can ignore it.
I think we can ignore it for purposes of the suppression hearing.
Apparently it came from it was mentioned by Detective Koster in his report.
That's right. Page 54 of clerk's papers mentioned that.
But as you say, that was not considered at the suppression hearing.
Not considered. It's funny that happened. That's why I didn't mention it in my briefing. But a similar thing happened in State versus Rose, which is one of the cases we've relied on for something else. In that case, at the appeal, there was an argument about probable cause to arrest. And that issue of residue hadn't come up, or some piece of evidence hadn't come up at the suppression hearing, and it hadn't been fully fleshed out, the court said, at the suppression hearing, because nobody had raised the issue of arrest. But since it was part of a stipulated trial, the court was willing to consider it in making its ruling to find that there was probable cause to arrest. But that's not the issue that was raised below. The issue raised below was the intrusion into the defendant's pocket, and it was an intrusion, lawful, when the officer had the defendant lawfully stopped for a lawful Terry stop and performed a lawful pat-down. Did he have enough information that he immediately recognized what he felt in the defendant's pocket as a methamphetamine pipe? And was that enough to show that there was probable cause, which means probably the defendant had this methamphetamine pipe in his pocket because he intended to use it? Our position is yes, that it was. There are very few things that in and of themselves...
Is there any other evidence that Brown intended to use the pipe, other than that the fact that the officers thought it was a meth pipe?
Well, the officer didn't think it was a meth pipe, Your Honor. With all due respect, the officer testified he knew it was a meth pipe the minute he felt it, because it was something that is designed only to smoke meth or heroin.
Didn't these officers also testify that meth pipes are incense burners and that's why they're marketed and sold at gas stations?
He says that's why they could be marketed and sold, because they're incense burners. But if you have a meth pipe that's known as a meth pipe that the officer said he's seen every day, well, he says he sees it literally all the time. I think he means figuratively all the time or quite often. He sees these pipes. He knows what they're used for most of the time. He, as he testifies about it being an incense burner, he suggests that that is an excuse to make the sale of these objects, which are going to be used probably for something illegal, into something legal. That's clearly and implicitly his suggestion to the court. Is there a lot of evidence in this case that the defendant intended to use this later as a meth pipe? No. Is there enough for that reasonable person with the officer's training and experience and everything he knows in these circumstances to believe that? Yes, there is. I was trying to think of an analogy, and I thought of somebody who has a can opener in his pocket. If you're walking around with one of those crank can openers in your pocket, you probably want to use it to open a can. Now, you could use it to hit someone in the head, and you could use it as a paperweight, and you could use it because you dislike the way it feels to have something nice and heavy in your pockets. But what are you probably going to use that for? You're probably going to use it for its intended purpose. The purpose of a methamphetamine pipe is to smoke illegal substances. And that's what this pipe was probably
used for. Yeah, but why are you going to use it at all? Maybe you're going to give that can opener to your mother as a gift.
Maybe, but what are you probably going to do with it? And that's what probable cause is. What are you probably going to do? If you're going to give it to somebody as a gift, if it were wrapped as a gift, you probably... there'd be a better argument that it was intended as a gift. If it were, if you had a collection of methamphetamine pipes in your house and they were all different colors and shapes and designs, then probably you're using it for decoration. But if you have it in your pocket when you're out walking about, you probably want to use it for an unlawful purpose, the purpose for which it was designed
so
and intended.
So if there was a police officer outside the store where this was purchased new, as soon as the person left the store, there'd be probable cause to arrest him.
There might not be in that case, but that's not the circumstance we have here. We have a
person. We're always looking for the next case, Ms. Albert. You know that. So what's missing from your construct? He probably bought it to smoke meth, and he has it in his possession as he leaves the store. So isn't that enough? And if that's enough for probable cause, is that enough later on for conviction, or is it just enough for probable cause but not for conviction?
It certainly wouldn't be enough for conviction, but probable cause is never about conviction. Probable cause is about something very different, and that's why even in this case we have more later on, because even with the pipe itself, when residue is found, that's enough. But, you know, I look back at the Fisher case, and that was sort of similar. I think that was a case from this division. And in Fisher, the court said, There was enough in this case because after this consent search, when the police officer pulled out the pipe, there was burnt residue in it. There's nothing that says the burnt residue was drug residue. We don't know what that burnt residue is. Couldn't it have been tobacco residue? Yes. Could it have been incense residue? Well, yes, it could have been, but it probably wasn't, and I think we're in the same situation here. That's all the evidence there was. Would it have been better if there were more? Of course it would have been. But when you're doing a plain feel, this is what's going to happen. That's probably why there are so few plain feel cases. It's probably why plain feel is recognized by every court that discusses this, something that's not going to come up very often, because it's really hard to immediately recognize something as contraband when you just do it by feel, which goes to the second argument of whether plain feel is a doctrine that's recognized under our Constitution. And it is. It's just part of plain view. When you're doing something you have a right to do in a place you have to be as a law enforcement officer, if you immediately recognize something as illegal, you're entitled to seize it. And that's what happened in this case. It's very rare that this comes up.
To go back to what was actually said in the testimony, I mean, I think your argument is that the officers, they recognize that they thought there was only one use for this pipe, but actually that isn't what they said, is it? I mean, they said it was a meth pipe. Okay, that was what they called it, but that doesn't say in itself that that's what they recognized its only use was.
They recognize
what they called it, because in their line of work, when they see something like this, that's what it is.
That's correct.
Yeah, they did not actually testify. Well, when you see this pipe, it really only has one use. They just said this is a meth pipe. That's what we recognize it as.
I think they testified that this is a pipe. It's used to smoke methamphetamine or heroin. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't be used to smoke marijuana. It wouldn't be used to smoke other things because of the structure, the way the bowl is set up is deeper in this and where the place is to light it. They said it's sold as an incense burner, and I think the implicit in that was that it's sold called that because that's the only way you can legally sell it. So while it is possible something else could have been smoked in it, just like in Fisher, that residue could have been from something else as well. Not likely, not probable, and the issue here is probable cause. Unless you have any other questions, I have nothing to add to my argument. Thanks.
Just briefly in rebuttal, I think Fisher is distinguishable because the way I read the facts of that case, and it's not entirely clear, the residue was discovered before the custodial arrest for possession of paraphernalia, and that is a fact that's missing here, and that would go further to proving intent. But I think we have to go back to the actual, and the reason why this isn't well spelled out in the transcript here is because the judge got the law wrong. He didn't think that there had to be any proof of intent at all to commit the crime of possession of paraphernalia. And that's not true. You have to actually use it for purposes of the state court or for the state statute, and you have to intend to use it for purposes of the Snohomish County code. So, no findings of intent. There wasn't evidence of intent here. As to the immediate feel and the plain feel, what the prosecutor is arguing for here is a complete, the exception would envelop the rule regarding pat-downs. And that's the problem that many courts have had with plain feel, is that unlike plain view, the question of whether or not the item is immediately recognizable as contraband when you use your tactile senses as opposed to your sight is a problem. Our state Supreme Court has followed the Fourth Amendment analysis for plain feel, plain touch, but has never addressed Article 1, Section 7, which, as this court is well aware, is not concerned with providing a backstop against police improprieties, but instead to protect the privacy of individuals. I think plain feel in this particular case is the question of one ambiguity on top of another. First is the ambiguity of paraphernalia itself, which can be anything, which can be items that have multiple uses, could be a pack of matches in the right factual circumstances, and then the ambiguity associated with plain feel. So I would, again, I would ask this court to avoid
what was, what was the matter with counsel's position that if the officer stood outside the head shop and saw someone purchase one of these new and then walk outside, and then the officer arrested them with it, that would be a lawful arrest because it was probably going to be used to ingest methamphetamine. What's missing from that for the test for probable cause?
Other indicia of the fact that this was going to be used for an illegal purpose. So an incense.
Why do you need anything else? If the testimony is this is what it's mostly used for, so that means this is what it was probably intended to be used for, and I saw him buy it and he had it in his possession. What's missing?
What's missing is any actual factual evidence of intent to use apart from the officer's supposition. You can assume that the pack of matches that the guy has in his pocket is going to be used to light a joint. And it's a problem because paraphernalia, the mere possession, is not a crime. And I agree that the officers have, you know, a hunch that perhaps it's going to be used for that. But the mere possession of that pipe is not criminal at all. And I agree that it puts the officers in a position where they have to gather other facts, but it's not sufficient for probable cause to arrest. Thank you.
Thank you.